Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-host, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-host, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Welcome, everybody, to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I'm your co-host, Scott Fullerton, along here with Kevin Hogan. It is Thursday, March 31st. Kevin, can you believe we're already at the end of the third month of the year?
I know. I'm so kind of happy, though, in a way. Once March is out of the way, doesn't April just sound nicer in a way?
It does. It almost sounds like sunshine, doesn't it?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to push the time by, and I know these Thursday shows are lovely, but I'm extra happy that we have ours now, and we're ready to, you know, kind of send March out on a nice note.
So how was your Easter?
Well, it was kind of busy in a way. I did the, Out in Santa Cruz show with Rob Watson and Steph. They were fantastic hosts on Saturday night.
Oh, they do a great show out there.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was, they have a really fun format. I was able to, talk quick enough for it. And Rob's wonderful because, he was a great guest here. We're going to be talking, I'm sure, more in the future. But, they were just real interested in the story. Rob actually read one of my poems live on air because of the Lambda stuff and everything else that's going on. But I was really touched by it. He was really moved. And I didn't know any of this was going to happen. So, no, I felt like a really honored guest. And still, we talked a whole bunch about Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. We had the chance. Both Steph and he were naturally talking about a lot of current events, things, what's been going on in North Carolina, those terrible events. And it was just really, they're really wonderful hosts. They really are. So good to them. And it was one of those times that everybody was getting ready for Sunday, but there was a lot to talk about before then because I felt like that time flew by like our show. So we must be doing the right thing, my friend, in our conversations.
Well, it goes so fast. And next thing you know, our hour show is an hour and 5 minutes, hour and 10 minutes, but the guests are just so fantastic. We don't want to cut anybody off.
Right. And I think that's the cool thing. I knew the quickness of their show, and I know that we give our guests, maybe a little bit more time to talk about what they're doing. And I think that's part of the things that people enjoy listening to, when people aren't trying to be reduced to a soundbite for the evening news or something. It's really nice to let these good projects get a little bit more explanation from the people that are so excited and have so much to do with them.
Well, and that's one of the things that I really enjoy about us producing our own show is, like, Rob's format, he's on regular terrestrial AM radio, so you kind of have laws and commercials and hours that you have to go by, and a lot of internet radio anymore is even very predetermined on how long it should be on. We're very lucky to produce our own show, so we can kind of have that option to really go in-depth with our guests. So I'm very excited about that. Now we just have to add a couple of people
like
to advertise
all,
with us, sponsor us, and it'll be a beautiful thing, right?
Absolutely. I like it all. I like the formatted show. It reminds me of an obstacle course where you have to be fit for that, and I kind of like our show when it goes a little bit off terrain, and it's kind of like cross-country running maybe, but I like them all. I like all the conversations.
Exactly. It's a lot of fun. I'm so excited that we've talked about it every week, and I hate to brag, but our show is so successful. We're getting lots of great listeners to it on the website. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes, I do like to tell you every week, head over to healingstigmaradio.com. That's www.healingstigmaradio.com. joining the conversation on Twitter at Heel Stigma Radio, and we're just having a great time.
Yeah. Hey, how was your Easter, my friend? How did you do?
I was okay. Let's just say that I didn't spend it celebrating with the traditional Easter dinner. Mom and I are by ourselves, as you know, here in Northeast Ohio. And mm-hmm. so we decided to spend the day at the casino. So we'll leave it at that. It was not your
okay.
typical normal Easter Sunday.
Good. Good, good. I'll let you have that one. And what I will say is I was out with our elderly but still very curious and lovely dogs when I looked down and realized one of our dogs had picked up an Easter egg that was obviously hidden outside, and I had to trace back where it came from to get him to give it
funny.
To me, and we put it back, and sure enough, it was on the edge of someone had put out an Easter egg hunt early in the morning, and without me realizing, one of the and hadn't even bit down on it, just had this in his mouth. So yeah, so everyone had a lovely, safe day, and we're hoping now to have I would love some more sunshine now in April. I would really love a little bit warmer than average April now. We've been having some chill weather as March has been getting out of here.
Yeah, you actually got that little storm, I think, that went through from Detroit that was really cold. We had an amazing day yesterday. For some reason, Northeast Ohio and Southwest Pennsylvania, where we went over to Pittsburgh, it was 77 degrees and beautiful sunshine yesterday. So I can't complain
fantastic.
At all.
It's to attract all those gamblers on Easter.
Exactly, right? And it was full. It was pretty full, I got to tell you. But anyway, let's get back from the craziness and go to the business at hand. We have two fantastic guests today. Sarah Siegel is with us from Mass Poetry. And then we have, I can't believe we have the official Poet Laureate of Connecticut. And
yay.
We have Rennie coming by, Rennie McQuilkin. But let's go ahead and get Sarah on the phone for our guests here. We're going to go ahead and play a little bit of Jay Knight, who is our guest a couple weeks back about bullying. This is one of his upbeat songs called Living for the Memories. So you're listening to Scott and Kevin right here on Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with the fantastic Sarah Siegel.
Second that will stand the test of time.
Waiting for a moment that's already passed you by. Don't you want to know what you've been missing? What you've been living blind? Life is what happens when you're making up a plan. Here and now, all we have to leave is our plans. Here and now, hold on tight, we're living for the memory.
Second that will stand the test of time.
Waiting for a moment that's already passed you by. Don't you want to know what you've been missing? What you've been living blind? Life is what happens when you're making up a plan. Here and now, all we have to live is our present. Here and now, hold on tight, we're living for the memory. Time.
And that was a fantastic Jay Knight, Living for the Memories. If you haven't caught his show yet, please go to the website at healingstigmaradio.com. Look for Jay Knight's interview. Did fantastic talk all about bullying and how he's helped support that cause by giving proceeds for one of his songs to a fantastic organization that's currently fighting bullying. But I'm so excited. We have our first guest today, the amazing Sarah Siegel. She's a lifelong writer based in Somerville, Massachusetts. She finished her undergraduate work with honors from Washington University in St. Louis and earned a master's in public administration at the University of Vermont. She's worked at Vermont's Children's Trust Foundation, which was a grant-making organization working with prevention programs throughout the state, and then moved to Boston in 2012 and spent almost 3 years as a development and alumni relations associate with School Year Abroad, a high school study abroad program. She took over as program director for Mass Poetry in 2014, and her short stories have been published in Wild Violet, Vantage Point, Cheese Literary Journal, and Cleaver Magazine. Kev and I are so excited to have her on this program today. Please welcome Sarah Siegel. Sarah, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, doing terrific. Kev and I are so excited to have you on. Right, Kevin?
Hi, Sarah. Absolutely. You are just, you're one of my heroes now. I got to tell you what you've been doing at Mass Poetry, and thank you for taking the time out. I'm just so, so honored to have you on the show today. So thank you.
Thanks. I don't know that I've been anybody's hero before, but thank you for having me.
Well, let's just put it this way. I don't know how many people you realize you affect in terms of people that have now been asking me about writing. Whatever it would be in this crazy little book of mine so far, when I've turned people on to the site and asked them to go look at it, they're really, really proud of it. And then, when I tell them, I know later I'm jumping ahead, that we don't have a poet laureate from Massachusetts, they're stunned, and then they're thrilled that someone like you, all I can say is, yeah, you really are. You're doing a great thing for expression because there's a whole bunch of people looking at what's going on. And I think for this little state, it's really, really important for people. It's such a great, diverse type of works that you're showcasing, that it also makes me really proud just to say that a little bit of it comes from me.
Yeah, we do. One of the main things that Mass Poetry focuses on is we try to bring in diversity in terms of age, ethnicity, gender, but also in terms of types of poetry. So we're not just doing,
right. You
know, a lot of people are like, I don't like poetry because they're thinking of maybe Emily Dickinson or Edgar Allan Poe, and I happen to like both those poets, but you know, we're trying to tell people, especially young people, you know, rap and hip-hop is poetry, and spoken word and slam is poetry, and so we really do try to get a diversity in all kinds of poets.
Well, I was just saying, that's one of our goals here on the radio show, is to bring about different parts of healing stigma, and we've found that the arts is such a great outlet for that. Kevin has shared his story, how his poetry has been amazingly therapeutic for him. He's gone on, now he's nominated for a Lambda Literary Award, but it's just so exciting how groups such as Mass Poetry help not only inspire writers, but also help in the healing of a lot of people to help get their emotions out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, poetry is an incredible way, reading it, writing it, performing it, watching it, however you want to engage with it. It really is an amazing way to find your own voice or see, you know, yourself reflected in somebody else's work. And we do a lot of work with students. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is we have these poet educators who are like, all right, I've been where you've been. Poetry is a way to find your voice, to express yourself, to see what's going on out there, to make a statement when a lot of kids feel like they maybe don't have a voice.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did you, it's a two-part question, so I know I'm giving homework here, but one, how did you find this yourself? How did you find the program, Mass Poetry? And then, do you find that there is something in this that is, how should I say, you know, the arts sometimes, even though language is taught as, you know, reading and writing, how the arts sometimes are affected by education. Sometimes they're under attack in our schools due to, you know, budgetary reasons or whatever. Is how important is that part of the education in this organization? So how do you find it, and how important is that education part of it?
Well, the way I found it is kind of boring. I found it through higherculture.org. which is an organization, I believe it's through the Mass Cultural Council, that shows open positions and volunteer roles and things like that. And that's how I learned of Mass Poetry.
Excellent.
You're right. I do think that arts tends to be one of the first things that cut from education, and it's really unfortunate. Yeah. I mean, I've been an artist and a lover of art my entire life, and I'm always just like, you know, if somebody asks me why it's important, I don't even know how to explain why it is. It's just, it is. and I think that, you know, not all students sell in math and science or even English, and there are other forms of art that are important for them. So one of our programs is something called Student Day of Poetry, and it's mostly with high schools but also with middle schools, where we have either a statewide one where we bring hundreds of students to a local college campus and they take workshops that are reading but also writing generative with poet educators. And then they watch the poets perform and they get to do their own student open mic. Or we even bring poet educators into the classroom. So tomorrow, for example, we have 5 poet educators coming into the Village School in Marblehead, and they're going to be working with 6th graders.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just these 6th graders that otherwise would be having sort of a, you know, regular boring day at school are going to get to engage with these poet educators. And
yeah,
not just, you know, here's how you read poetry, but here's how you make poetry. Here's how you make art.
Well, it's interesting. So I'm thinking back, because I knew you'd be great for the show also because of the program, but also your background, because before you were working, correct me if I'm not wrong, in something to do with studying abroad. And naturally,
yeah,
with, you know, current events and everything else going on, sometimes people, I'm someone just, again, I've lived outside of the country in Europe for over a decade, and I've traveled extensively, and I find a lot of that helps me in my writing. It helps me in my experiences when I go to, you know, look at art and have actually been able to see it in other countries and how other forms of education work as well. But was that under challenges? And one of the things I like is you take on a challenge. You know what I'm saying? I mean, in terms of, I think it's very important for students, no matter, I don't want people traveling to unsafe situations, obviously, but I think travel is such an important thing to understand your own culture, to understand your own country. Travel for me was as important in education as anything I learned in any classroom. And I was just wondering,
yeah,
if you see those relating and how you take to challenges.
So the organization I worked with is called School Year Abroad, and they're a wonderful organization that the headquarters are in North Andover, but there are campuses in China, France, Spain, and Italy. I was on the alumni and development side, so I'm not sure how, you know, if study abroad was kind of, I don't want to say under attack, that sounds weird, but like, you know, if it's the same sort of arts where it can be marginalized.
Right.
But, I mean, this is a high school study abroad, so when you have a kid who's 16 and moves to China or France for a year, you know, they're going to do incredible things. And being in the alumni and development side, I heard all of their stories afterwards about exactly what you said, that they learned more about their home culture in some ways by going away. And
absolutely,
they also got to see all this art in person. It's just, it really is just another way of education. It's more, it's hands-on. It's workshops.
It's experiential,
it's
isn't it?
Out. Yes, that's
yeah,
the word I'm looking for. Thank you.
Well, no, because I proved this point. But when I was teaching and a coach, I actually had the opportunity to bring a competitive group over to the Nile to race in Egypt. And
wow,
you know, and I was such a coach that I was like, look, it's not about the trip, it's about the race. We got over there, every single thing. I proved me wrong. It was amazing. It was about the trip. Of course it was about the trip, and of course it was about the cultural experience, which was amazing. But you know, it's one of those things that, yeah, I've always found that when you get the chance to travel, and when you get the chance to use on top of it the ability to express what you've learned, it always seems to make a difference for people. For me, when I see it happen, especially to students early on in education, it also oftentimes makes a difference in what they study later on. You were a hero. You were a hero of mine when I read your background and see what you're doing. So it was it wasn't a word I just throw out. It was a word I use with great respect, Sarah. So I'm psyched at what you're doing at Mass Poetry.
Okay, let's talk about Mass Poetry a little bit itself. It was established in 2009. Started out with like 55 poetry partners, about 150 honorary advisory board, and right now you're providing resources for poets, for readers of poetry, teachers, librarians, and others. Talk a little bit about the organization. I know you have like 4 core principles. What can you tell us about Mass Poetry?
So we are young. As you said, we started in 2009, and I actually began my role in December, so I'm even newer. We really try to celebrate both Massachusetts poets and to celebrate poetry in general. We try to bring poetry to the people, and we try to make poetry part of, you know, Massachusetts citizens' everyday lives. We have the Poetry on the Tea program, which having a hard day, you're on your commute, and those ads are really boring, and you look up and you see a palm instead that's beautifully designed instead of an ad, and it can be really nice. And something that we're actually working on with the city of Boston right now in terms of really bringing poetry to the people is a project called Raining Poetry. There is this spray called Rainworks that was developed in Seattle, and it's biodegradable. It's not bad for the earth. And you spray it, and it is completely water repellent. So we have local artists making stencils for us of poems written from Massachusetts poets. And we're going to spray them in locations throughout the city. And then when it rains, you are going to see a poem.
Wow.
So that is something, yeah, that's pretty exciting. We're working with the city of Boston, and we're hopefully going to get that on the ground literally in the next few days.
Hey,
and
make sure you send stuff. If you guys get that on, obviously, on social media or whatever, Sarah, will you share that with me through Healing Stigma? And I'll make sure that we cross-promote that, please. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Thank you.
I just saw that visual. Isn't that amazing? I just saw it. That's super.
So we do work with teachers and students, as I mentioned, the Student Day of Poetry, and we have professional development programs it's mostly geared towards high school teachers, but it's really open to educators of all kinds who want to incorporate writing poetic technique in their work. We have U35, which is a reading series for poets under 35, and we have Common Threads, which is a collection of Massachusetts poems chosen by a guest editor. It's an annual publication, and we include how to read a poem and try to facilitate discussion groups throughout the state. And then I would be remiss not to mention our biggest event, which is coming up pretty soon. We have the Mass Poetry Festival, which takes place in Salem. This year it's April 29th to May 1st, and it is over 100 sessions of reading, panels, Q&A. There's going to be a poetry circus, poetry and yoga, some amazing headliners. As I said, we really work for diversity, bringing poetry to the people, and also paying poets is a big thing, because a lot of time artists are asked to do things for free, and they are incredibly generous and happy to, but we want to pay our poets whenever we can. So that's kind of the overview of Mass Poetry.
I want the people to know about that poetry festival. Again, that's the 2016 Mass Poetry Festival, April 29th through May 1st in historic downtown Salem. And if they go to your website, they can actually join a mailing list and even volunteer, and if they volunteer, they get free entrance and a festival T-shirt, right?
Yep. We are always looking for more volunteers to help make this incredible event happen.
Telling folks, it's a beautiful spot. It's a great place to go to see all of the stuff for Mass Poetry. It's just fantastic. I mean, some people may only know Salem from, you know, Halloween and huge crowds. This crowd is really fun, and I would encourage people to go to it. It really is a lovely setting. You guys do a great job with it. But hey, I have a question for you, Sarah. So do you have contact, or what is Mass Poetry in terms of how does it fit with, are there other states with the same type of organization? And if so, how are you in contact? Is there kind of a movement here? Because one of the things that's interesting, I know I'm getting ahead to our caller that's going to be calling in later, but you know, I was really astounded when I read the article on Mass Poetry that we don't have a poet laureate in Massachusetts. And I was just wondering, how is this organization in terms of other states? What have you learned?
I was actually surprised to learn that Massachusetts did not have a poet laureate either.
Right.
There are actually only 5 states that don't.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I would imagine that the states that do have poet laureates, I don't know if would do the work that we're doing, but would be sort of the poetry outreach person there.
Yeah. We're going to have to ask. We're going to have to put Rennie on the hot seat.
Yeah. We do have, so I know we have a Boston poet laureate. Danielle George is an amazing poet, and she actually chose the initial poems that we're starting this Raining Poetry project for.
Excellent.
So I know that she does work around Boston, but we are Mass Poetry, so we work with Massachusetts, but obviously being so close to other New England states, like with the festival, we do have, you know, Vermonters and New Hampshire sites. I'm not sure what the word is there. Come down. I'm sure in one of the other 49 states there's a, you know, Kansas poetry or Colorado poetry or whatever it may be.
Well, we want to start a Massachusetts movement for a poet laureate. We don't know if we need to But I was just curious because I had other people asking me before this saying, hey, I want my state to have one of these, because really you are making an impact. People are looking at this, and I know people that have responded to me that looked at the interview that you guys loaded for me. I was so thrilled that you guys did that. But when they looked at it, people from all over said, you know, I've now went to look and try and find in my own state if I have this, and I can't find it. And sometimes, you know, you would expect other states that also have a rich literary background, you would expect them to have it, just like you'd expect Massachusetts to have a poet laureate program. You know, it's funny,
right?
You expect these things, then you go look for it, and oftentimes it's not there.
Yeah. I mean, it is surprising. I guess I don't know if poet laureates take recommendations, but I guess for the, you know, the states that I don't necessarily have the information for, one would think that maybe they can reach out to their poet laureate and ask them to take this on.
Yeah, great idea. No, anyway, all I'm saying is people are thrilled with the website. They also love how you guys put the – and I was just noticing, you were talking about the spraying of the waterproofing. Your actual logo, which I love, is kind of like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Just sorry. Yeah, good job. Good branding.
Let's go back and find a little more about what you do as program director. I mean, you listed some of your programs, and I have them here. You got some great ones. You have the Mass Poetry Festival. You got the Student Day of Poetry, Common Thread, Poetry on the Tee, the U35 Poetry, and your workshops and seminars. Were those all there when you started, or what kind of program, how is that getting into those programs, and what's on your plate? What are you looking to develop yourself?
They all were there when I started. I had a wonderful predecessor named Lauren Macias, who moved to New York City, and she's working at the Poetry Society of America. She, handed all of this over to me. It was all in place already. We are looking to, I think at this point, we are a small organization, so we're not looking to necessarily add new programs, just to develop them more. So we're looking to increase the number of student days of poetry that we have in schools, and we're looking to increase schools that have a poet in residence. Right now we have one school that has a poet in residence, and it's something that a lot of schools don't have the budget for, but, you know, to get the most out of it for these kids, we either want, you know, sort of like a week or 2 week intensive, or poets coming in, you know, once a month for the entire school year so that they can really watch the students develop. And so right now our U35 series is just a reading, but we're looking at maybe having a workshop component to that too, in terms of how to get published for the younger poets. We also have something which is not new. I think it's been done twice before. We have something called an Evening of Inspired Leaders, and that happened December 7th in 2015, and it's going to be happening in the fall again in 2016, where we have great leaders, just exceptional leaders throughout the state of Massachusetts that come and they share a poem that means something to them and how it's impacted them.
That's really cool. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Sarah,
so
can I put an idea in your head, though? You don't have to take it on, but I'm going to say this.
Okay.
If you're thinking ahead, because a lot of people that I deal with that are asking me questions, not deal, that's the wrong word, that I try to help or, you know, express what I went through, a lot of them are adults, and a lot of them are also returning to school or doing something through community college as well. And a lot of them, I help through naturally being a leader of the Bisexual Resource Center or through the Rainbow community deal with their own emotions and expression. So if anything comes up with that in terms of reaching to, you know, be it publication or anything like that with the adult community, and especially through community college programs, and especially for the Rainbow community, if there's anything that Mass Poetry is looking to do with that, please, please let me know. I would love to help out with that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so much that I see every day. We literally had, I know the BRC just sponsored an open mic night for youth, and it was such a positive thing, and they were so excited to have a positive, safe place to express themselves. And I think what goes on here on so many different levels, the facets of expression that people use, and again, this comes from healing stigma. It doesn't always have to be because of stigmatization. I get that people can write poetry for any reason, but the amount of people that I find that are, you know, using what happened to them and then writing about it and then wanting to return, and it's actually, as I said, they're returning oftentimes to get more education, to find out even more about how to express what's inside themselves. And I find that such a beautiful and moving thing when people go and get education and use it to help them express, and also to then very bravely put it out there for others to experience it as well. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, there's something very very powerful about going back, because it's not just I'm doing this because I'm this age and this is what you do. I'm doing this because I genuinely want to be here learning this.
Again, hats off to the kids. I'm glad they're getting that. And when the adult programs come along as well, I know you're gonna be making a difference. This organization is gonna be making a difference. It may be young, but people are catching on to it, and I'm really, really happy about it. But now I gotta ask a question: is it true that you're also part of an improv comedy troupe?
Not improv, sketch comedy.
Sketch comedy.
Improv,
okay.
Boston. Yeah, which is why I think a lot of people think we're improv.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm part of a sketch comedy group called Mr. Business.
Talk about that. Yeah, tell us about
that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We all met taking sketch comedy writing classes at Improv Boston in Central Square, and we were like, this is really fun, and we want to keep doing it. So we're a bunch of 20 to 40-year-old comedians who... We meet every Monday, and we write sketches, and we edit and review and revise, and then we have shows at Improv Boston Central Square, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a great place. Yeah, that is really fun.
Yeah.
See, Scott, this is seriously how rich, even though I traveled, coming back here, in many ways coming back here is such an incredible thing in this area. I know I'm proud of my Boston roots here, but it's just unbelievable, the city. You come back, and it's no wonder why after what happened to me, people say, oh, you know, how did you learn how to write about it? I didn't. I was just in a very rich, how should I say, intellectually a rich, very rich intellectual group of people that encouraged me to write about what happened to me. It was almost a natural reaction.
Yeah,
Boston is fantastic for that.
It really is.
I don't know enough about, you know, enough other places, but I think Massachusetts is really great for that.
I just want to also ask about, I mean, you guys also as an organization work as fiscal agents. You guys work for Mass Leap and Louder Than a Bomb Mass, right?
Yeah, that actually, we're going to be ending that relationship in June, I believe. And they're going to be their own 501c3. But yeah, we've been working. They do the Louder Than a Bomb poetry reading series. You know, a lot of great work comes out of that.
How can people help out, Sarah, in terms of, you know, those that are, you know, maybe there's someone who's just starting to write, or maybe it's a retired teacher. Maybe it's someone who, beyond just say, I mean, I suppose the best thing is to volunteer first would be, you know, for the upcoming festival. But for those that want to help out in some way or even make a donation or whatever, is it still the best way is to go to the website?
Yes. On our website, you can make a donation. You can join our mailing list to find out news and information. You can follow us on Twitter, which is Mass Poetry. Or Facebook, also Mass Poetry. Really just getting the word out about what we're doing. If you know somebody who is in high school or teaches high school and you want to learn more about a student day of poetry, get in touch with me and we can set something up. Or if you are part of a community group or you want to just have some friends over for a poetry reading, that's what Common Threads is for. We try to facilitate discussion groups. We provide you with these poems that have their roots in Massachusetts, and it has guides to reading them, and we even partner with certain poets who they are able to. They can come and lead the discussion group for you. Yeah, and then also, I guess, if you are so inclined, you can sponsor or help sponsor Poetry on the Tee, because it is not free getting ad space on the Tee.
Right.
And so we work with different sponsors, either our poetry partners or local MFA programs or local presses, to get some Massachusetts poets, get their work seen.
You Boston people have to remind the non-Boston people what the T is.
Oh,
that's true.
Yeah, I guess so.
Public transportation system is what we complain about. It's what we want. It's topic of conversation just about every single day, so that's why it only needs one letter. There's even an old song about a guy who couldn't get off it, who just kept riding and riding around, Charlie on the MTA.
Oh, we sang that at, I went to camp in the Berkshires, and that was one of the songs that we sang.
See? It's true. It's true. But no, see, one of the things I wanted to compliment you on, so you say it's a small organization, but you hear all these different programs, and you guys are doing them well, and, you know, it's one of those things as well in it is the fact that there's I've worked with some writers that can be very disorganized. They can really be good in their craft. They can, you know, like comedy writers or whatever, they can be excellent in their craft, but they might not meet a deadline, or they can be, you know, not necessarily the most organized person. You must have, you know, a seriously double-sided mind or whatever it is, because you must have a very organized mind to be able to run all this, and yet you're also, by, you know, is it an outlet for you, your writing? Because it seems as though you're able to feed both.
Yeah, I am very organized, and I don't actually write poetry, but I do write short stories and sketch comedy. Yeah, and I also, I craft, so So I guess those are all kind of my outlines. But
your outlets.
I'm
so thankful for you at the helm because you do appreciate the artist. I can say, again, for our listeners out there, my first interaction was actually having my Ria Strad, my debut poetry collection. Everybody knows I'm so proud and happy about it. But not bragging about it here is just the fact that that was featured as a new read on Mass Poetry. And for everything from the interview process, everything I was contacted by, just so you know, Sarah, and I don't think told you this, I had no idea that it was anything but a very large, well-run professional organization. So every, you know, from an artist perspective, every bit of contact that I had has been a pleasure, and it's been extremely, extremely organized. That's the reason why I wanted to find out who's running this and have it, whoever that person is in the organization, highlighted, not because of me, but because I feel that when we have this kind of expression going on for people, it's a great way for people to not just heal stigma, but feel that there's a voice for their diversity to be heard. So again, every step of the way, you guys are running it well from my perspective.
Thank you. I do have to say, though, I would need to also give credit to Lauren Macius before me for, you know, setting everything up to run so smoothly. And also with the new books in particular, that is one of the things that our program assistants take care of. So that is all on her.
Thank them, please, all of those folks.
I will.
Fantastic people.
Well, Kevin, I'm telling you, I'm so happy to have Sarah on today. Sarah, thank you so much for being here. Again, we have all your contact information for Mass Poetry. Any last words you have for Sarah, Kevin?
Sarah, I just want to say, again, going forward this year, fantastic. You're going to have a great year, and all the programs that you're doing, I'm such a big fan, and I'll probably see you in Salem. And I just think everyone there, please give them my thanks, and thanks for taking the time today on Healing Stigma Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Everyone, stay tuned. We're going to have the Poet Laureate of Connecticut, Rennie McQuilkin, on in just a couple of moments. You're listening to Scott and Kevin on Healing Stigma with Left to Straight Radio. We're going to play a little Trevor Page's American Dream. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Oh,
All right, and we are back. That was our good friend Trevor Page with American Dream. Well, we're so excited to have our second guest today. Rennie McQuilkin is the current poet laureate for the state of Connecticut and has a distinguished literary career with several published full-length collections of poetry. His work has appeared in The Atlantic, The Yale Review, The Christian Science Monitor, The American Scholar, and many other publications. He was a recipient of the National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship, as well as numerous other honors and awards. He is currently the publisher and editor of Antrim House Books, that publishes the work of Connecticut poets and provides great exposure and access to the work of poets everywhere. Kevin and I are so excited to have him on today. Please welcome Rennie McQuilkin. Rennie, how are you today?
I am well, thank you.
Hey, thank you for coming on, Rennie.
Your audience. Yeah, I should correct one thing. We do publish authors beyond Connecticut, Kevin Hogan being a notable example of that, my Riestrad being his fabulous book out of the closer to Boston area.
That's true. That's true.
Fantastic.
Rennie has no problems with where you are. He loves good poetry.
That's it. Yep. He started as a Connecticut-based operation.
Right.
And we've gone farther.
Well, we are so excited to have you today. We just got off the phone with the fantastic Sarah, who was with Mass Poetry, and we're really interested to learn all about the Poet Laureate Program. I've kind of did a lot of research kind of getting ready to talk to you today. I'm really surprised on a couple of things. But let's start with Connecticut in particular. You've had a Poet Laureate position in Connecticut since 1985. You are the sixth Poet Laureate of the state, and you're appointed from July 2015 through 2020, and that's usually done by the Connecticut Commission on Culture and Tourism. Is that right?
Yes. I think it keeps changing its name. The subdivision is the Office of the Arts, which is under something called the Office of Economic and Community Development. It all has to do with money. But the Office of the Arts, fortunately, is more focused on the arts, which
right.
is a subset of the larger organization in the state.
Yeah, congratulations. And I'm just curious now, Rennie, how, you know, for our listeners out there, it's a title that is absolutely, to me, I'm so happy for you personally. I'm so happy for what it does for your work. But just to the average person out there, how does it change your experience, you know, as a poet, as a writer? How has the title changed for you?
Well, it means I had to buy a new truck because I'm all over the state. Going here and beyond, working with young poets, giving readings, giving talks,
right.
attending events.
Didn't you just do an event with the poet, one of the inaugural poets? Didn't you just do something recently? Tell our listeners about that.
The inaugural poet being Richard Blanco. Yes,
yes.
Richard, who was the inaugural poet in Washington for the second inauguration of Barack Obama,
right.
gave a reading at Hillstead in the inner sanctum of Hillstead, which is an old estate, the owner of which was great friends with Henry James and William James and Archibald MacLeish, and had them all over for lunch
wow.
and dinner. And we read in the inner library, which has a collection of, 100,000 poetry volumes or something. And Richard
wow.
Blanco was the featured poet. But I gave a reading before his of a couple of poems, and it was a gala
well done.
Event. I must say Richard Blanco is a fabulous reader. And
that's fantastic. Hey, so, you know, I just have to say this while we're on it, though. I have been looking over Learning the Angels. And I just wanted to ask, is that your most recent book, Rennie?
No, that goes back
no.
a ways.
Okay, that goes back a ways.
Okay,
you have several, but I just have to say that I have been looking at that one. And everything that I look at from this man, for our listeners, I don't know, can they find all of your books on the Antrim House website?
Yes, I believe
okay.
so.
Okay,
yep.
Well, Scott will be good at making sure we get all those, but I just have to say, then I keep discovering new facets of your poetry every day, Rennie, and so by all means, I encourage our listeners to go check it out, but I was just, I'm just so inspired by what I read, and I do want our listeners to know this, that I had no way of meeting Rennie ahead of time when I sent out my poetry to be read, so our first connection was, first and foremost, strictly just through the written word. And all I can say is, Rennie, you really deserve this title as Poet Laureate. I know there's a great many good poets down there, but the more I discover about you as a poet every day, the prouder I am to say I know you as a friend.
That is very high praise indeed.
Yeah.
I do think that writing poetry allows one to find out new things about him or herself, so that if the poems reveal new things to you, they're also revealing new things to me. The very first thing I did after becoming Poet Laureate was so totally unexpected. I never would have guessed it would be possible, but I began writing a poem a day on the saint of the day. I'm not a particularly religious person. I'm of no particular denomination. I was never Catholic, but I've become fascinated by the saints and began to write a poem each day for the saint of the day, and it went on for quite a while, and the book is coming to fruition now.
Oh, excellent.
So there
excellent.
Are always, I think writing is a wonderful way to explore oneself.
Maybe we could open it up as an invite. When the book comes out, Rennie, and you'd like to talk about it, I'd certainly love you to come back on the show again, because this is one of those things. Expression here in the show and how it moves forward has such an, you know, right now in current events, there's so much that goes on with religion that is stigmatizing, that using it in positive ways that is new learning, I find so fascinating. So again, I'll let Scott speak in a second. I'm being rude and interrupting, but I'd love to invite you back on again when that book comes to fruition and you'd like to talk about it.
I do think that some of the poems stigmatize religion. In fact, not all the saints are to my liking. St. Augustine,
right.
Who was more interested in a young 12-year-old heiress than he was in his 15-year relationship with a woman from Carthage, and he sent her packing back to Carthage, is not one of my favorites. And St. Francis seems to be the hero of the book, who was more down to earth than most.
There you go.
Literally.
There you go.
Yeah. Never wore shoes.
Yeah, one of the things I found fascinating about your story when I was reading it, Rennie, was I know you were writing from the time you were 20, but the right time you really started getting into it, you were teaching creative writing at Phillips Academy, and you started doing your own assignments or something? Tell me about that a bit.
It hooked me. I, of course, you know, as we all do, as children, I wrote poetry, and, you know, it was put up on the bulletin board, and I was very pleased with myself, and then I got serious, you know, and I ended up going to law school, and that didn't take, so I ended up in the Army, and that didn't take. But while I was in Trip Trucks, I discovered that writing poetry, Trip Trucks being a very boring place to be, that writing poetry was a way to be less bored, so I began to do it again, and so that preceded the class at Phillips. It was a summer school class, but I was kind of prepped to begin. And when I started giving out assignments and doing them myself, that was it. You know, there was no hope for me. I was hopelessly hooked. I continued to teach for 30 years, but really all the time writing poetry was my main love.
Yeah. How funny that we met when we did, and mine was after being, you know, my backstory, people know on the show, whatever, can take a look at it on the website. But, you know, again, I was teaching for 20 years, and then when that was gone, and I had these voices in my head that I recognized, not voices that weren't supposed to be there, but voices I recognized that were different forms of poetry, and I started writing them down. I literally, as I said, I felt like I had all these, like a master mechanic locked out of the garage, so I just had to go start making them, or I would have lost my own sanity by not letting this come out on paper.
Yeah, I think listening to one's voice is a very sane way to proceed through life. And there
brilliantly
are so many voices, you know, like Steppenwolf, thousand voices, all vying for one's attention, and one has to give attention to each one in turn.
Yeah.
And they're surprising, as I said, often.
And can I also add here, people that may not know this, that Rennie, as a publisher, is one thing. Antrim House is, and I also have to say this, you have a fantastic knack for having a name of a publishing house that comes to the top of the alphabet. People find you quickly, Rennie, which is great. This man is brilliant in every way. But also, Rennie, and I just want to say this, is one of the most caring, intelligent voices I have ever met. To let someone into your manuscript before it is a finished piece and to take and invite that person in. This is also one of these, Rennie is one of the very, very kindest, most generous editors and most talented editors I've ever had the pleasure. So just while our listeners hear that, I want everyone to know that whatever happens, this finalist nomination, whatever it is, for Lambda Literary, and I'm so proud of the book, Maitri Estrade, but a lot of that is a big thanks to this gentleman we have here, Rennie McQuilkin, who is so kind to take kind of, you know, all these different shards, as I say, of glass and help turn it into stained glass windows. So thank you, Rennie.
Well, you're most welcome. What a joy it was to work on this on that book. It's
Thank
an
you.
Incredible book.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
This
you.
Was a paid advertisement, and we approved of it.
Oh, my God.
There
and he never
go.
Loses his humor. Never loses his humor.
Well, let's
Sorry,
talk a little bit about what you've been doing while you've been Poet Laureate in Connecticut. Two of the things I found fascinating and exciting is you're doing a couple of things. First, you're promoting using local access television, and I think you have over 35 episodes available for streaming. And secondly, what I didn't know is there's not just Poet Laureate for the state, but there's a lot of individual communities. We found out that Boston has one as a city, and you're actually advocating for towns, hospitals, even retirement homes to create Poet Laureate positions as well. Talk about those two things,
Indeed, the access television
and creating other laureates.
Right. There is a group called the Coalition of Poets Laureate in Connecticut that is actively promoting and also aiding the creation of town and city poet laureates. And as you say, there's a retirement community that has one. There is a Veterans Administration Hospital that has one in Connecticut. And they are growing by leaps and bounds every day, and new one seems to be cropping up. We're very excited about it in a variety of ways.
And creating that community is such an important thing. I just have to say that for our listeners, we know that when people are stigmatized or oftentimes feeling that they don't have a way of expressing themselves, another way of saying that is you don't have a community to express it to. And you know, these are very important programs, and I'm so glad to hear that it's having this effect, that what you're doing is carrying on to other communities. That's really important.
And the local access television component is another way that we're building community. I'm the Poet Laureate actually of Simsbury in Connecticut, as well as of the state. And in Simsbury, we have a local, wonderful local access station that it can be streamed worldwide. And we are now, I think, actually beyond 35 into our, I think we just did our 37th episode. These are half-hour programs. To date, they've all been Antrim House poets, that is, those that I have published. But I think I'm going to branch out and have others now.
Excellent. Excellent. And by the way, Rennie, I always say this, for things like that, if we can ever cross-promote that, always let me know, send that along, and, you know, we can put it through the Healing Stigma social media team when those come out. I'd love to promote that. That's fantastic.
They can be streamed, of course.
Excellent. Excellent.
Excellent. And the other thing I've done recently is to begin a poetry column in the Hartford Current, and they're doing big half-page spreads. I think they're 11 inches by 11 inches. Yeah, it's really quite something. I didn't think they would do it because poetry has been anathema there for years.
Right.
For about 40 years. When we first came to Connecticut, they had a poetry column. But this has attracted a lot of attention. And
nice job.
Yeah.
Nice
very
job.
Very excited about it.
Hey, Rennie, do you know this? We can do a little bit of live radio. I don't know if I told you this, but one of the poems from Maitri Estrade, The Gender Bend, is going to be published in the Summer Gay and Lesbian Review, the July-August issue. I don't know if I told you. We just found out about it. So for people wanting to find out where to buy poetry, let's say, over this summer that are buying the Gay and Lesbian Review, they're going to have the chance to read a selection. And I just wanted to let you know that. I think that's really great news. I'm so honored by it.
Send me the info, and I'll put it in our upcoming events section.
I know you are the busiest man in Connecticut. You absolutely you update everything, and you're constantly going. Where do you get your energy from, Rennie?
I don't sleep. I have a lot of time on my hands.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we're going to have to get all these people together. We had a nutritionist as well. So everyone we have is some of the most energetic people, and they're going to want to know. Our Healing Stigma alumni are all going to be these, you know, these heroes of energy and accomplishment and productivity, because I don't think we've talked to anyone so far that doesn't have, you know, the energy of a 20 or a 25-year-old. It's amazing.
Yeah, the candle's burning at both ends. let's hope it is a lovely light and doesn't go out. Yes.
Well, here, before anything, I have to ask this. Do you have any suggestions or any advice? I know Sarah Siegel, the program director, again at masspoetry.org, for our listeners listening. I was shocked, Rennie. I don't know if you saw this, but Massachusetts is one of only four or five states that does not have a poet laureate. And right now they're trying by reaching out to naturally the appropriate folks in the state government to be able to have this happen. But, you know, any advice as to why Massachusetts should take this seriously when many people say, oh, you know, that's money better spent elsewhere or it's not really important. What would you say giving us advice in Massachusetts why we should have that program here?
Well, you know, I think from observing what the local poet laureates are doing and what I'm doing and what others before me as Connecticut poet laureates have done, it is to bring poetry to the people rather than allowing the establishment of the academia really to control it. The impulse by having troubadours, essentially, poetic troubadours, going all around the state, bringing poetry to the young and the old, and I'm going to a school that has fifth through eighth grade young women from disadvantaged backgrounds in Hartford. I'm going in to do an 8 o'clock assembly, which involves reading a poem and talking with the kids about poetry. And I think you have to hear it as you have to see Shakespeare on the stage to fully appreciate it. And what the poet laureates can do is make it an oral art form, a performance art, by going around giving readings and encouraging others to give readings, doing favorite poem readings with the local mayor and the janitor and everybody else pitching in and doing their favorite poems. And I think it's clear from the poet laureates in Washington, Robert Pinsky, for instance, who began the favorite poem project. They and Ted Kooser have made poetry a popular form rather than allowing the establishment to make it so esoteric that everybody hates it.
Yes,
so I'm
yes.
I'm going to... really, I think.
In the same vein, Rennie, I'm kind of wondering how... because I was doing research, like Kevin was saying, right now, Alabama, Alaska, and Nevada currently are vacant, don't have any poet laureate seats statewide. And then Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New Mexico, and Pennsylvania haven't even created the position yet. Ohio created their very first one, started January of this year. Where do you recommend people listening to us and in those states, where are places or resources they have available to kind of ask us? Should that start at local government or state or federal? How should that work?
Well, you know, I think it can operate on all those levels. There are certainly Massachusetts has a very fine commission on the arts. I'm not sure what the official name of it is, but there have got to be people there to talk to who would like to promote such a program. I would go to the state level, to the arts commission, whatever it is called in each state. I saw the new poet laureate of Ohio in a town meeting with Hillary Clinton. He stood up and asked a question and announced the fact that he was the Ohio Poet Laureate. You could see heads swiveling. What is that in the audience? So he made his presence known nationally.
Yes, right.
I would go.
Yeah, that was exciting. And then as far as the nation's Poet Laureate, we have the very first Hispanic, Juan Felipe Herrera. Have you worked with him or talked to him at all?
Well, I began a poetry festival in Farmington, Connecticut at the Hillstead Museum, and we attract huge crowds. This year he's going to be one of our poets, and we're very excited about that. We've created a whole Hispanic night for him with young Hispanic poets.
Wow.
A warm-up poet who is Hispanic, we're going to do it up right. He's created a real interest in Latino and by extension Latina poetry,
Brian, and
literature in general.
Is that Garden Poetry Festival you're talking about?
Well, the poetry festival I mean it's called the Sunken Garden Poetry Festival, and it's been going on for almost 25 years at Hillstead Museum. In a beautiful sunken garden, when we've had almost all the major New England poets. I think Derek Walcott is just about, and Mary Oliver are just about the only two we have not had. We had Kunitz when he was in his 90s, Galway Kinnell several times, Donald Hall. Galway Kinnell introduced Donald Hall, the first reading he gave after the death of his beloved wife, Jane Kenyon. We will have Mr. Herrera coming this summer. It's one of the primary poetry festivals in the country. I think that what Massachusetts is doing is also extremely exciting and very energetic and multifaceted.
It's young. It has energy, and there's good people organizing it.
Yeah.
It really is.
Right.
It really is.
No, I see it all the time online. They are every week or more often. I get notices of events.
And isn't this great? This is the positive use of the internet. Again, for our listeners, here's where the internet is a good thing. It's being used to, you know, form these types of community, and it's catching on. I mean, younger people are finding, as well as old, all types of people are finding their ways to these organizations and learning from it, how to start it in their own, you know, like you said, in their own neighborhood. I think it's great.
And Facebook, of course, is very active in promoting the cause. I'm not a great lover of Facebook, but I like that aspect of it.
Well, that's
so
fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, poetry, the great thing that I like about poetry is there's no rules involved. There's no right. There's no wrong in how to do it. For someone who's just starting out wanting to get out their feelings, how do you recommend someone even starting poetry?
Well, you know, I think one can go too far in saying there are no rules. I personally believe that poetry must be musical. And that if it's not musical, it's too close to prose. Originally, lyric poetry, of course, was strummed to a lyre. Now, that doesn't mean you have to have steady rhyme. In fact, I don't use a lot of traditional rhyme at all. But I'm always aware of a drum beat in my head. I am aware of sound effects, which may be going on within the lines rather than at the ends of lines. And it's not a hard and fast rule. But I think that if a poem is not musical, one would have to wonder whether it really is a poem. But of course, what is a poem? But that's, you know, a very open-ended question. But I write a little at the thought that there are no boundaries, no rules. But basically, one can be hidebound by rules, and I think it's better to say, you know, that poetry allows in a lot of different voices and approaches than to make it straitjacket it with rule. I love the program called Poetry Out Loud, which Dana Gioia at the National Endowment for the Arts began a while ago, which asks high school students to approach poetry by learning it from inside out, not talking about, you know, all the trochees and the spondees and the anaphests, but rather learning it, assimilating it, making part of their blood, flesh and blood, and memorizing it. But that means incorporating it into their body, and then speaking it out before they ever think about it at all. Learning how best to say it, as Robert Frost was wont to say. He didn't read his poems; he said his poems. And that is a somewhat rule-less approach to poetry, I think. It says poetry is a bodily, visceral thing, not an intellectual thing, not in its essence. Yeah. I mean, then you can always think about the poems later on, but start from the toes up rather than the head down. And so, I'm agreeing with you about the rule-lessness. The unruliness, let's put it that way, the unruliness of poetry, which can still be ruly, you know, in terms of the idea that there might better be, you know, a drum beat and a sense of sound and a musical quality to it. But you can be pretty unruly in music.
Well said. See, Scott, this is why I describe my poetry as bare knuckles poetry after talking to Rennie. Good. You get it?
Yeah.
I get it, definitely.
Yeah.
It should be pugilistic,
too. I hate to be the keeper of the time clock, as I always am, unfortunately, but we're running out of time for this episode. I know. We got to have you back. Like Kevin says, it's just we have so much fun with our guests, and they find them so interesting that we could talk forever. So the great thing is we're never going to run out of guests because we're going to have our guests back on
there
at least
are.
A couple of times
yeah.
a year.
Good.
But
good.
Thank you so much
happily.
For being on. Kevin, do you have anything further to ask Rennie?
Well, I guess for this, Rennie, how could folks find, since obviously all of this is so exciting, again, how could folks find the easiest way to Antrim House for both your poetry, my poetry, and any other ways that you'd like folks to find your calendar and events? How could folks
well,
find
we have
you?
We have a website. That's the best way to get to see sample poems and read all
mm-hmm.
about the poets and the books. And it's antrimhousebooks.com. Antrim is a hard word to spell, like County Antrim. A-N as in Nancy, T-R-I-M as in Mary, antrimhousebooks.com.
Excellent. Excellent.
Terrific.
Before we leave today, the other thing that I just thought was so brilliant in the timing of all of this is that you just gave me a whole nother aspect on why this is so important of, how should I say, letting these organizations, but it's in a way, we talk about a lot of these events, the democratization of poetry in a way by not having academia choose it. It's very important now, even more important than ever, than in a place like Massachusetts that we do that through the appropriate channel. So thank you for framing that. I learned something today. Even though I talked to Rennie and we're in contact, you still taught me something else. So every conversation I have, my friend, is enlightening. Thank you.
Poetry like bread is for everyone is a slogan that Curbstone Press, which was a Connecticut-based press, coined.
You're brilliant,
my
friend.
They didn't coin it. They repeated it. Poetry like bread is for everyone.
For everyone.
Not
well
just
said.
For Helen Vendler at Harvard University.
Right. Brilliant.
I want to
my
thank
pleasure.
Rennie so much for coming on today. You're welcome anytime, and you have a wonderful afternoon, my friend.
Thank you much.
Thanks,
good
Rennie.
You
take
all.
Care.
Thank you for calling.
Good. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was a great conversation, huh, Kevin?
I know. Isn't it great? He's got a great radio voice, too.
He does. I can't believe I talked to a poet laureate of a state. That's kind of all sorts of awesome.
I know. It really is. He's a wonderful person. He's so generous, and he's brilliant. You know, I mean, he is an inspiration to me. When I write poetry, it's one of those things I feel so lucky that I write in the genre that I do so that I could meet Rennie.
Yeah, he is just absolutely fantastic. We had a great show today. I mean, we say that every week, but, boy, we just keep getting such fortunate guests on. Sarah was terrific. I hope everyone goes and checks out masspoetry.org. And then go to Rennie's site, which, again, I believe you said it was.
It's antrimhousebooks.com.
Terrific, And get to both of those websites. So exciting to hear from them. We got so many great shows coming up. Speaking of your poetry, we're still excited. We got the Land Literary Awards going on still. So be sure to check that. I hope they go and pick up a copy of your book before those awards happen.
Yeah.
So they could just see how magnificent that is. Anything else you have coming on this week?
Let's see. Well, I want everyone to send good thoughts. I'm going to be presenting to a Washington committee to help form trauma-informed communities through interfaith congregations. So I'm going to be presenting a short bit about healing stigma. So next week I'll have updates on that. I think there's a lot going on in current events these days that people are realizing, this work is important. And then again, if things start to get too heavy, we also have, in April, the wonderful Margaret Cho is going to be on because comedy is another way we talk about these things. So we're going to try and keep it mixing it up, pushing through on all different forms of expression. But if there's something that, you know, a form of stigma or something that you'd like us to talk about on the show, please, you know, reach out to us. Give us a, you know, drop us a message.
So or have an idea that might be a great guest for the show you'd like to explore, go to our website. That's www.healingstigmaradio.com. Go to the comment or contact us section there. And let us know if something you want to hear us talk about or a person you might think would be a great guest or you yourself being a great guest. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other thing is I just wanted to let you know that I was talking to just emailing back and forth the group that Jay Knight's working with, Stand for the Silent. Kirk Smalley, the founder of it, I've been talking to him, so I think they're going to be on the show sometime because I know he's very busy with visiting schools. But let's face it, we haven't had the final word on how to end bullying and, you know, and stigma of those that are being bullied. So, yeah, they're very excited about being on the show, too.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of the things that we cover, we're going to be covering quite a few times because there never seems to be a shortage in these areas. But the good thing is we're tackling them one at a time. We're learning new and different ways to cope with it from fascinating people. We're getting your program, Healing Stigma. It's going to help people deal with this. So I'm really looking forward to it. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at the hashtag Heal Stigma Radio so you can find out all about our upcoming guests. Like I said, we have some great guests coming on the rest of April. And we're just looking forward to bringing some more great internet radio.
You said it, Scott. I'm here. I'm on board. You signed me up, and it's been a great trip so far. These Thursdays I look forward to, and absolutely looking forward to the next one.
One of the highlights of my week, I have to tell you. Thank you so much. Again, this we have Kevin Hogan. I'm Scott Fullerton. Thanks for tuning in to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. We're going to end the show today by bringing it a little more mellow today with a good friend of our show, Liz Rubino, and her rendition of Scarborough Fair Live.
Are you going to Scarborough?